pillow beside her in the torn jeans and flip-flops.
That's her husband. I heard he's a billionaire too,
Carrie Chu whispered back.
It's like all my patients these days. I never know whether the kid in my dental chair is homeless or owns Google,
Ray said gruffly. After everyone in the wedding party had been introduced to one another, and Jason Chu had snapped enough pictures of himself with the supermodel and Nick's haughty cousin Astrid, who he swore had to be that babe from House of Flying Daggers, Samantha began corralling everyone into position for the procession up the aisle.
Okay, after Mehmet has made sure all the guests have taken their seats, the procession can begin. Jace, you need to escort Aunt Carrie up the aisle first, before you come back for Mom. Once you get Mom to her seat, you're done, and you can take the seat next to her. Now I need Alistair Ching. Where are you?
Alistair identified himself as Samantha checked the chart on her iPad.
Okay, you'll be escorting Astrid Leong up the aisle since she's representing Nick's family. That's Astrid over there. Will you remember her tomorrow?
I think so. She's my cousin, Alistair said in his usual laconic manner.
My bad. I didn't realize you were a cousin too, Samantha giggled.
Nick's phone started buzzing again, and he dug into his jeans pocket in annoyance. It was from the same number, but this time it was a text message. Nick scrolled to the text, which read,
Sorry. Tried everything I could to stop Mum. Love, Dad.
Nick stared at the text again. What on earth could his father mean? Samantha began barking out new orders.
Okay, now it's time for the groom and his best man to enter. Nick and Colin, both of you will be at the staging area to the left of the pavilion while all the guests are being seated. When you hear the cello solo begin, that's your cue to walk down the path toward...
Excuse me for one sec, Nick said, dashing away from the arch. He stood at the back corner of the forecourt, frantically trying to call his father. This time, it went straight to voicemail.
I'm sorry, but the person you called has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet. Please try your call again later.
Damn. Nick tried calling his father's regular Sydney number, an avalanche of dread suddenly beginning to engulf him.
Colin came up to check on him.
Everything okay?
I don't know. Hey, don't you have security wherever you travel?
Colin rolled his eyes.
Yes, it's a big nuisance, but Araminta's father insists on it.
Where's your security detail now?
There's a team posted outside the gates, and that woman over there is Araminta's personal bodyguard, Colin replied,
indicating a woman with a frizzy spiral perm, seated inconspicuously among Rachel's relatives.
I know she looks like a bank teller, but let me tell you, she's former Chinese Special Forces and can disembowel a man in under 10 seconds.
Nick showed Colin the text message from his father.
Can you please call your security people and request extra backup for tomorrow? I'll pay whatever it takes.
We need to go into full lockdown and make sure that only the people on the guest list are allowed onto the property.
Colin grimaced. I think it's a little too late for that.
What do you mean?
Look dead ahead. 12 o'clock.
Nick stared for a second.
No, that's not my mum. That's a cousin of Rachel's from New Jersey.
I mean, look up. In the sky.
Nick squinted into the bright blue sky.
Oh my fucking hell. Viv, is Ollie ready?
Samantha said, bending down to give Rachel's little toddler cousin the blue velvet pillow for the wedding rings. The boy took hold of the pillow for 2 seconds before it suddenly blew out of his hands. The branches on the towering oak trees began to tremble, and a deafening hum filled the air. From out of nowhere, a large black and white helicopter zoomed over the portico and hovered above the great lawn as it slowly began to land. Samantha and Rachel stared in horror as the wind gusts from the giant propellers began to tear apart everything on the portico, like a tornado that had just touched down.
Get away from the trellis! It's coming down!
A workman screamed as everyone began running for cover. The arch toppled over just as the trellis began to collapse. Parts of bamboo began blowing off the structure at high speed, and the wisteria buds were blown clear off their stems. Aunt Belinda screamed as a big clump of jasmine hit her in the face.
Hiya! Everything is ruined!
Carrie Chu cried. When the propellers of the Augusta Westland AW-109 finally ground to a halt, the forward door opened and a burly man in dark sunglasses jumped out to open the main cabin door. A Chinese woman clad in a chic, saffron-colored pantsuit stepped out.
Jesus! Of course it's Auntie Eleanor! Estrid groaned.
Rachel went absolutely numb as she watched Nick sprint across the lawn toward his mother. Colin and Araminta rushed up behind her, followed by a Chinese lady with a bad perm, who was for some reason brandishing a gun.
Let's get you back to the house, Colin said.
No, I'll be fine, Rachel replied.
Witnessing the sheer absurdity of the situation, a sudden realization had come over her. She had absolutely nothing to fear. Nick's mother was the one who was filled with fear. She was so afraid of this marriage actually taking place that she would go to all the trouble of chartering a helicopter and landing right in the frigging middle of their wedding site. Rachel found herself involuntarily walking onto the lawn toward Nick. She wanted to be by his side. Nick stormed up to his mother in fury.
What the hell are you doing here?
Eleanor looked at her son calmly and said, I knew you were going to be mad. But there was no other way to reach you since you refused to return any of my calls.
So you think you could stop my wedding by launching this invasion? You're out of your fucking mind!
Nikki, stop using that kind of language.
I did not come here to stop your wedding. I have no intention of doing that. In fact, I want you to marry Rachel. We're calling security. You need to get off the premises right now.
By this point, Rachel was beside him. Nick glanced at her quickly in concern, and Rachel smiled at him reassuringly.
Hello, Mrs. Young, she said, finding a renewed confidence in her voice. Hello, Rachel. Can we please speak somewhere private?
Eleanor asked.
No. Rachel is not speaking to you in private. Haven't you already done enough?
Nick interjected.
Alama, I'll pay to have everything fixed. Actually, you should be thanking me that rickety bamboo thing came down. There was a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Listen to me. I'm really not here to ruin your wedding. I came here to ask for your forgiveness. I want to give you my blessing.
It's a bit late for that. Please just leave us alone.
Trust me. I know where I'm not wanted, and I will gladly leave. But I felt that I needed to make things right for Rachel before she walks down the aisle.
Do you really want to deprive her of meeting her father before her wedding?
Nick stared at his mother as if she was deranged.
What are you talking about?
Eleanor ignored her son and looked Rachel straight in the eyes.
I'm talking about your real father, Rachel. I found him for you. That's what I've been trying to tell the both of you for the past month.
I don't believe you,
Nick said defiantly.
I don't care if you believe me. I met Rachel's father's wife through your cousin Eddie when I was in London last year. You can ask him yourself. It was all a complete coincidence, but I managed to put two and two together and confirm that he really is her father.
Rachel. Your father's name is Bao Gaoliang, and he's one of the top politicians in Beijing.
Bao Gaoliang? Rachel said the name slowly in utter disbelief.
And right now, he's at the Four Seasons Biltmore in Santa Barbara, and he's hoping to see your mother Carrie again. And he's dying to meet you. Come with me, Rachel, and I'll take all of you to him. This is another bullshit scheme of yours. You're not taking Rachel anywhere.
Nick was seething. Rachel put her hand on Nick's arm.
It's fine. I want to meet this guy. Let's see if he's really my father.
Rachel did not speak during the short helicopter ride to the hotel. She clutched Nick's hand tightly and looked pensively at her mother sitting across from her. She realized from her mother's expression that all this was much more difficult for her, since it was the first time in more than 3 decades that Carrie would be seeing the man she had been in love with. The man who had rescued her from her abusive husband and the terror of his family. As they disembarked from the helicopter, Rachel had to pause for a moment before continuing into the hotel.
Are you going to be okay? Nick asked.
I think so. It's all happening too fast, Rachel said. This was not how she had imagined it would happen. She didn't really have a set vision of how things might unfold. But after the disappointment of her last 2 trips to China, she had begun to lose hope that she would ever find her father. Or else, it would happen years from now, after making a long, arduous journey to some far outpost. She never thought that she would meet him for the first time at a resort in Santa Barbara on the day before her wedding. Rachel and her mother were led through the mimosa-scented lobby, then down a long Mediterranean-tiled corridor, and outside again. As they walked through the lush gardens toward one of the private cottage suites, Rachel felt as though she were floating through some strange nebulous dream. Time seemed to have sped up, and everything seemed so unreal. It was all too bright, too tropical for such a momentous occasion. Before she could fully collect herself, they were at the front of the cottage, and Nick's mother was giving the mission-style wooden door a few rapid knocks. Rachel took a deep breath.
I'm right here with you, Nick whispered from behind, giving her shoulder an affectionate squeeze.
The door was opened by a man with an earpiece who Rachel assumed was some sort of bodyguard. Inside the room was another man in an open collared shirt and a pale yellow sweater vest sitting in front of the fireplace. His rimless glasses framed a vibrant, fair-complexioned face, and his jet-black hair, meticulously combed with a part on the left, had a few graying streaks at the temples. Could this really be her father? Carrie stood at the doorway hesitantly, but as the man got up and came toward the light, she suddenly put her hands to her mouth and let out a small gasp.
Gawei!
The man came up to Rachel's mother and stared into her face searchingly for a split second before scooping her into a tight embrace.
Carrie Ching, you are even prettier than I remember, he said in Mandarin.
Carrie broke out in loud, violent sobs, and Rachel found her eyes flooding uncontrollably with tears as she watched her mother crying against the man's chest. Managing to collect herself after a few moments, Carrie turned to her daughter and said,
Rachel, this is your father.
Rachel couldn't believe she was hearing those words. She stood by the doorway, suddenly feeling as if she were 5 years old again. Standing outside the cottage, Eleanor turned to her son and said in a rather choked-up voice,
Come on. Let's give them some privacy.
Nick, a little misty-eyed himself, answered, That's the best thing I've heard you say in a long time, Mum. Chapter 11 Four Seasons Biltmore, Santa Barbara, California. Comfortably ensconced in the hotel lounge with a requisite cup of hot water and lemon, Eleanor proceeded to recount to Nick the full story of how she came to discover Rachel's real father.
Bao Xiaoyan was so grateful to all of us in London. Your hopeless cousin Eddie left after a few days, after getting fitted for his new suits, and Xiaoyan didn't know a soul in London. So we took care of her. We took her to visit Carlton every day in the hospital while he was recovering from his surgeries. We took her to eat at the halfway decent Chinese restaurants. And Francesca even drove all of us to the Bicester Village outlets one day.
Xiaoyan was in seventh heaven when she discovered that they had a Loro Piana outlet store there. My God, you should have seen how much cashmere that woman bought. I think she had to buy 3 big suitcases at the Tumi outlet just to fit everything.
As soon as Carlton was out of intensive care, I encouraged Xiaoyan to let him do his rehabilitation in Singapore. I even called up Dr. Chia at NUH to pull strings and get Carlton into the best physical therapy program. So, of course, Carlton's father came down to visit from Beijing, and I got to know the family well over the next few months. Meanwhile, Auntie Lorena's private investigator in China went to dig up everything he could on the family.
Auntie Lorena and her shady investigators, Nick scoffed, taking a sip of his coffee.
Alamak, you should be grateful Lorena hired Mr. Wong. Without his snooping around and paying off the right people, we would never have been able to get to the truth.
It turned out that Bao Gao Liang had changed his name right after he graduated from university. Gao Wei was always a boyhood nickname. His actual name was Sun Gao Liang. He grew up in Fujian, but his parents made him take the surname of his godfather, who was a well-respected party official in Jiangsu province, because then he could move there and get a better start to his career.
So how did you break the news to the Baos?
At one point, Xiaoyan had to go back to China to attend to some business, and Gao Liang was alone in Singapore visiting Carlton. One night, I took him to have Kai Fan at Wee Nam Kee.
Hainanese chicken rice, which could arguably be considered the national dish of Singapore. And yes, Eleanor is ready for foodie bloggers to start attacking her restaurant choice. She chose Wee Nam Kee specifically because the United Square location is only 5 minutes from the Bao condo, and parking there is $2 after 6 p.m. If she took him to Chatterbox, which she personally prefers, parking at Mandarin Hotel would have been a nightmare, and she would have had to valet her Jaguar for $15, which she would rather die than do.
And I asked him about his younger days. He started to tell me about his college days in Fujian. So at one point I just blurted out, "Did you ever know a woman by the name of Carrie Ching?"
Gao Liang's face went white as a ghost. He said,
"I don't know anyone by that name."
Then he suddenly wanted to finish his dinner quickly and leave. That's when I finally confronted him with the truth. I said, "Gao Liang, please don't be alarmed. You can leave if you want, but before you do, please hear me out. I feel that fate has brought us together. My son is engaged to a woman by the name of Rachel Chu. Please let me show you her picture, and I think you will understand that something remarkable has happened."
"What photo of Rachel do you have?" Nick asked.
Eleanor blushed.
"It's the one from her California driver's license that I got from the first detective I hired in Beverly Hills. Anyway, Gao Liang took one look at the photo and went into complete shock. He immediately asked, "Who is this girl?"
"It's just so obvious. The girl in the picture looks exactly like Carlton, but with long hair and makeup, of course." So I said, "That girl is the daughter of a woman who goes by the name of Carrie Chu. She now lives in California, but she used to live in Xiamen when she was married to a man by the name of Zhou Fang Ming." And that's when Gao Liang finally cracked.
"Wow, you should do this professionally," Nick said with a raised eyebrow.
"You can make fun of me all you want, but Rachel wouldn't be meeting her father today if it wasn't for my interfering."
"No, no, I wasn't being sarcastic. I meant it as a compliment."
"I know you're still angry with me for all that's happened, but I want you to know that everything I did for your sake."
Nick shook his head indignantly.
"How do you expect me to react? You almost ruined the love of my life. You didn't trust my judgment, and you just assumed the worst of Rachel from the beginning. You thought she was a gold digger even before you met her." "Hiya, how many times can I say I'm sorry? I misjudged her. I misjudged you. Gold digger or not, I didn't want you to marry Rachel because I knew it would lead to heartache for you as soon as your grandmother became involved. I knew Ama would never approve,
and I wanted to spare you her wrath. Because once upon a time, I was that unacceptable daughter-in-law. And I was not even the daughter of a single mother from mainland China. Believe me, I know what it feels like to suffer under her disapproval. But you never saw that side of her. I protected you from that. She adored you from the day you were born. And I never wanted that to change.
Nick noticed the tears brimming in his mother's eyes, and he softened his stance. A waiter walked by, and Nick gestured to him.
Excuse me. Could we please have another cup of hot water with lemon slices on the side? Thank you.
Very hot, please,
Eleanor added, as she dabbed away her tears with the crumpled pieces of Kleenex she always seemed to have in her purse.
Well, I'm sure you know that Amar plans to disinherit me now. Jacqueline Ling told me just as much a few weeks ago.
That Jacqueline always does your Amar's dirty work, but you can never be sure what Amar is going to do.
Anyway, it doesn't matter as much, because you have Rachel. I truly mean it now when I say I'm very glad she's going to be your wife.
My, how your tone has changed. I guess you don't disapprove of Rachel now that you know her real father is some bigwig politician in China.
He's not just some politician. He's much more than that.
What do you mean?
Eleanor did a quick scan of the room to make sure no one could overhear her.
Bao Gao Liang's father started Millennium Pharmaceuticals, one of the largest medical companies in China. The stock is a blue chip on the Shanghai Stock Exchange.
So, I don't understand how that impresses you. Everyone you know is rich.
Eleanor leaned in closer and lowered her voice.
Aiya, these people aren't just everyday rich with a few hundred million. They are China rich. We're talking billions and billions. More important, they only have one son and now one daughter.
So that's why your son is so keen on us getting married. Nick groaned as his mother's true motives finally dawned on him.
Of course. If Rachel plays her cards right, she will be a great heiress and you will benefit too.
I'm so glad I can always count on you to have some sort of ulterior motive that involves money.
I'm just looking out for you. Now that your inheritance from Amar is so uncertain, you can't blame me for wanting the best for you.
No, I don't suppose I can, Nick said quietly. As frustrated as he was, he realized he was never going to change his mother. Like so many of her generation, her entire existence revolved around the acquisition and preservation of fortune. It seemed like all her friends were in the same contest to see who could leave the most houses, the biggest conglomerates, and the fattest stock portfolios to their children after they died.
Eleanor leaned in closer.
Now, here are some things you need to know about the Baos.
I don't need to hear any idle gossip.
Aiya, it's not idle gossip. These are important details I've learned just from being around them and from what Mr. Wong found out.
Stop right there. I don't want to know, Nick said emphatically.
Aiya, I need to tell you for your own good.
Give it a rest, Mum. Rachel just met her dad 20 minutes ago, and now you want to spill all the secrets of his family?
Your digging around and secrets are what almost ruined my relationship in the first place. It's not fair to Rachel, and it's not the way I want to begin my marriage.
Eleanor sighed. This son of hers was impossible. He was too stubborn and too self-righteous, and couldn't even see that she was trying to help him. Well, she would have to wait for another opportunity. Squeezing more lemon into her water and not making direct eye contact with her son, she asked,
So is there a chance you'll let your poor lonely mother come to her only child's wedding tomorrow?
Nick was silent for a moment.
Let me talk to Rachel. I'm not sure whether she's ready to roll out the red carpet after you just destroyed her wedding site. But I'll ask.
Eleanor got up from the table in excitement.
I'm going to talk to the concierge right now. We'll fix it.
We'll fly in all the wisteria in the world if we have to. I'll make sure our wedding is back to perfection.
I'm sure Rachel will appreciate that.
And let me go call Dad. He should get on a plane right now. It's still not too late for him to make it here by tomorrow afternoon.
You know, I said I'd talk to Rachel. I didn't promise anything. Nick cautioned.
Ayah, of course she will let me come. I can tell she's the forgiving type just by looking at her face. That's the one good thing about her. She doesn't have high cheekbones. Women with high cheekbones are very gao-zai.
No English words can properly do justice to this charming Hokkien term, which is used to describe people who are equal parts bitchy, unreasonable, stuck-up, and impossible to deal with.
Now, will you please do one thing for me?
What?
Please go to the barber shop and get your hair cut before tomorrow. It's far too long, and I can't stand to see you on your wedding day looking like some chow ah beng.
Hokkien, for stinky low-class gangster. Chapter 12. Arcadia, Montecito, California. The late afternoon sun hovered over the crest of the Santa Ynez Mountains, suffusing everything in a golden haze. The bamboo trellis had been fully restored to its former glory, creating a luxuriant canopy of hanging wisteria and jasmine over the central aisle, its delicately sweet scent wafting across the guests as they took their seats on the portico. With a neoclassical music pavilion carved from Tuscan stone as a backdrop and towering 200-year-old oaks framing the gardens, the scene looked like something straight out of a Maxfield Parrish painting. At the appointed moment, Nick emerged from the pavilion with his best man, Colin, and took his place beside an arch majestically radiating with white dendrobium orchids. He surveyed the 100 or so guests, noticing that his father, just arrived from Sydney and wearing an extremely rumpled gray suit, was seated next to Astrid, while his mother was a row behind, gossiping with Araminta, who had minutes ago caused a stir when she entered the portico in a show-stopping emerald green Gian Battista Valli gown with a deconstructed ruffle neckline that plunged all the way down to her navel.
"Don't fidget,"
Astrid mouthed from the front row as Nick fussed nervously with his cufflinks. She couldn't help but recall the skinny boy in soccer shorts who used to run around with her in the gardens of Tyersal Park, scaling trees and jumping into ponds. They were forever inventing games and getting lost in fantasy worlds. Nicky, always the Peter Pan to her Wendy, but now here he was, all grown up and looking utterly dashing in his celestial blue Henry Poole tuxedo, ready to create his own new world with Rachel. There would be great trouble to come once their grandmother found out about the wedding, but at least for tonight, Nicky was getting to marry the girl of his dreams. The wall of French doors at the front of the pavilion opened, and from inside, a musician on a grand piano began to play a vaguely familiar melody as Rachel's bridesmaids, Peck Lin, Samantha, and Sylvia, in pearl-gray bias-cut silk dresses, began the procession up the aisle. Auntie Belinda, in a gold lamé St. John gown with matching bolero top, suddenly recognized that the pianist was playing Fleetwood Mac's Landslide, and began to sob uncontrollably into his Chanel handkerchief. Uncle Ray, mystified by his wife's behavior, pretended not to notice and stared straight ahead, while Auntie Jin turned around and glared at her.
Sorry, Stevie just gets me every time, Belinda whispered, trying to collect herself.
After the pianist had finished, another surprise awaited the crowd as the lights inside the pavilion dimmed, and a scrim hanging above the building came down, revealing a full ensemble of musicians from the San Francisco Symphony on the roof. The conductor raised his baton, and as the delicate opening strains of Aaron Copland's Appalachian Spring began to fill the air, Rachel appeared at the steps of the portico on the arm of her Uncle Walt. The wedding guests murmured in approval at the bride,
who looked stunning in a figure-hugging gown of silk crepe de chine, with delicate knife pleats that fanned out over the fitted bodice and a column skirt that draped across the front in romantic cascading folds. With her long, luxuriant hair worn down in loose curls and pinned on the sides with a pair of feather-shaped Art Deco diamond clips, she was the epitome of a relaxed, modern bride with just a touch of 1930s Hollywood glamour. Rachel clutched her bouquet of long-stemmed white tulips and calla lilies, smiling at all the people she knew. Then, she caught sight of her mother seated in the front row next to Bao Gaoliang. She had of course insisted that Uncle Walt, who had always been the closest thing to a paternal figure, walk her down the aisle. But seeing her mother and father together like this stirred up a whole new set of emotions. Her parents were here. Her parents. She realized that this was the first time in her life that she could actually use that term properly. And her eyes began to well up. There goes that hour spent in the makeup chair. Just yesterday morning, she had almost given up hope of ever meeting her real father. But by the end of the day, she discovered that not only was her father alive and very much real, but she also had a half-brother. It was more than she could have ever hoped for, and in a strange roundabout way, she had Nick to thank for all of this. Bao Gaoliang couldn't help but feel a peculiar sense of pride as he watched his daughter glide gracefully down the aisle. Here was a woman he had not met until yesterday, but already he could feel an undeniable connection with her, something he couldn't seem to forge with his own son. Carlton and Xiaoyan had a special bond that he was never able to penetrate, and he suddenly began to dread the conversation that he knew would take place when he returned to China. He had yet to discuss any of Eleanor Young's revelations with Xiaoyan, who thought he was on a diplomatic mission in Australia. How in the world was he ever going to explain all this to his wife and son?
"I can't believe how beautiful you look," Nick whispered when Rachel reached his side.
Rachel, too moved to say anything, simply nodded. She looked into the kind, beautiful, sexy eyes of the man she was about to marry and wondered whether this was all a dream. After the ceremony, as the wedding guests adjourned to a reception inside the music pavilion, Eleanor sidled up to Astrid and began her commentary.
"The only thing missing from that service was a good Methodist pastor. Where's Tony Chi when you need him?"
"I didn't really care for that We Are All Nature Unitarian minister.
Did you see he was wearing an earring? What sort of Kopi license minister is he?"
Kopi is Singlish slang for coffee. Kopi license refers to any sort of license or certificate that was obtained not by true merit, but by paying a small bribe to an official. Enough for him or her to buy a coffee with. Though the term is used to insult doctors, lawyers, or some other qualified individual, it is most often used while swearing at bad drivers, who surely must have bribed the examiner in order to pass their driving tests. Believe it or not, Asians can sometimes be bad drivers too.
Astrid, who hadn't spoken to Eleanor since her Apocalypse Now-style arrival the day before, gave her a sharp look. "Next time you plan on plying my child with a gallon of ice cream, you have to take him for the rest of the day. You have no idea how long it took us to pry him off the ceiling."
"Sorry, la, but you knew I had to find out about the wedding. See? It all worked out in the end, didn't it?"
"I suppose so. But you could have spared everyone so much heartache."
Refusing to be any more contrite, Eleanor tried changing the subject.
"Hey, did you help Rachel choose her dress?"
"No, but doesn't she look lovely?"
"I find it a bit plain."
"I think it's exquisitely simple. It looks like something Carol Lombard would have worn to a dinner party on the French Riviera." "I find your dress much more striking," Eleanor said, admiring Astrid's cobalt blue halter neck Gaultier outfit. "Ay, yeah.
You've seen me in this a dozen times.
I thought I recognized it. Didn't you wear it to Araminta's wedding?
I wear it to every wedding.
Why on earth do you do that?
Don't you remember Cecilia Ching's wedding years ago, when people couldn't stop talking about my dress in front of her? I felt so bad. I decided from that day on to always wear the same dress to every wedding.
You're a funny one. No wonder you get along with my son, with all his funny ideas.
I'll take that as a compliment, Auntie El. The sunken garden behind the music pavilion had been transformed into an al fresco ballroom. Hundreds of candles and antique crystal orbs sparkled in the eucalyptus trees surrounding the garden, while old-fashioned Klieg lights cast a silver screen glow onto the dance floor. Astrid leaned on the stone balustrade overlooking the garden, wishing her husband could have been here to dance with her under the moonlight. The phone inside her minaudière gave a quick buzz, and she smiled, thinking Michael must have just read her mind and pinged her. She got out her phone eagerly and found a text message.
Hope you're enjoying the wedding. Guess what? Had to come to San Jose on business. If you're staying in CA for a few days, let's meet up. Maybe San Francisco? I can send my plane to pick you up. There's an Italian place in Sausalito I know you'd love.
Charles Wu. +852-6775-9999. The guests began gathering on the terrace to watch the newlyweds have their first dance, but before the music started up, Colin suddenly began clinking loudly on his champagne glass to get everybody's attention.
Hello, everyone. I'm Nikki's best man, Colin. Don't worry, I'm not going to bore anyone with a long-winded toast. I just felt that on this most special of occasions, the happy couple needed a little surprise.
Nick shot Colin a look that said, "What the hell are you doing?" Grinning from year to year, Colin continued.
A few months ago, my wife and I ran into a friend of Rachel's at the Churchill Club.
He looked over at Picklin, who raised her champagne glass conspiratorially.
It turns out that all through college, Rachel would play a certain song over and over until it drove Picklin up the wall. And guess what? I just happened to know it was one of Nick's favorite songs, too.
So, Nick and Rachel thought they would be dancing to some romantic waltz by the San Francisco Symphony right now. But they're not.
Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Mr. and Mrs. Young to the dance floor for the very first time, accompanied by one of the world's greatest singers.
With those words, a band of musicians entered the small stage at the edge of the garden, followed by a petite woman with a shock of platinum blonde hair. The crowd began to scream in excitement, while many of the older folks looked utterly baffled by all the excitement. Nick and Rachel stared first at Colin and then at Picklin, their mouths agape.
I can't believe it. Did you know anything about this? Rachel exclaimed.
No, sneaky bastards, Nick said as he led Rachel onto the dance floor.
The first chords of a familiar hit song began to fill the air, and the crowd roared in approval. Philip and Eleanor Young stood on the steps leading down to the garden, watching as their son twirled his bride around with debonair ease. Philip glanced over at his wife.
Your son is happy at last. It wouldn't hurt for you to smile a little, too.
I'm smiling, La. I'm smiling. I've been smiling till my face hurts at all these annoyingly friendly relatives of Rachel's. Why do all these ABCs talk to you as if they think you are their best friend? It's so presumptuous. I was all prepared for them to hate me.
Why would they hate you? You ended up doing a very good deed for Rachel.
Eleanor began to say something but then changed her mind. Just say it, darling. You know you want to. You've been wanting to tell me something all night. Philip egged her on.
I'm not so sure Rachel will think I did such a good deed once she really gets to know her new family.
What do you mean by that?
Mr. Wong emailed me a new report late last night. I need to show it to you. Frankly,
I think I might have made a mistake getting mixed up with the Baos in the first place. Eleanor sighed.
Well, it's a little too late, darling. We're related to them now.
Eleanor gave her husband a look of abject horror. It was the first time this had occurred to her. Nick and Rachel swayed together to the rhythm of the song, feeling almost delirious with happiness.
Can you believe we really pulled this off? Nick asked.
Not really. I'm waiting for the next helicopter to land.
No more helicopters and no more surprises ever, I promise, Nick said as he twirled her around. From now on, we're just going to be a boring married couple.
Oh, please. When I decided to walk down the aisle with you, Nicholas Young, I knew I'd be signing up for a lifetime of surprises. I wouldn't want it any other way.
But you have to at least give me a clue where we're going on our honeymoon this summer.
Well, I had all these grand plans that involved the midnight sun and a few fjords. But then your father just asked if we would visit him in Shanghai as soon as summer break starts. He's eager for you to meet your brother. And he swears he'll hook us up at the most romantic spots in all of China. So what do you think of that?
I think it's the best idea I've ever heard, Rachel said, her eyes lighting up with excitement.
Nick pulled her into an embrace. I love you, Mrs. Young. And I love you. But who says I'm going to take your name?
Nick frowned like a hurt child and then broke out into a grin.
You don't have to take my name, hun. You can be Rachel Rodham Chu for all I care.
You know what I realized today? Rachel Chu was the name my mother gave me, but it turned out not to be my name. And even though my father's last name is Bao, that really wasn't his name either. The only name that's truly all mine is Rachel Young, and that's a choice I'm making. Nick gave Rachel a long, tender kiss as the wedding guests broke out into applause. Then he waved for everybody to join them on the dance floor, and as Cyndi Lauper continued her song, the newlyweds began to sing along. If you're lost, you can look, and you will find me, time after time.
Part 2. If you want to know what God thinks of money, just look at the people he gave it to. Dorothy Parker. Chapter 1. Kotong Consulting Group, Social Impact Assessment. Prepared for Mrs. Bernard Tai by Corinna Kotong, April 2013. Let us be completely frank and start with the obvious. Your former name was Kitty Pong, and you were not born on Hong Kong Island Kowloon, or any of the surrounding islands that make up the former British Crown Colony of Hong Kong. Remember, for the crowd you seek to impress, your money means nothing. Especially these days, when 20-something mainlanders have burst onto the scene with billions apiece, the old guard have resorted to new ways of stratifying themselves. What matters more than ever now are bloodlines, and when your family first made its money. Which province of China did your family originate from? Which dialect group? Were they part of the tightly knit Chiu Chau clans? Or the Shanghai emigre class? Are you second, third, or fourth generation rich? And how was the fortune made? Was it in textiles or property? Pre-Li Ka-shing or post-1997? Every minute detail matters. For instance, you can have $10 billion but still be considered nothing more than a speck of dirt by the Kyongs, who are down to their last 100 million but can trace their lineage to the Duke of Yangshan, a direct descendant of Confucius, who was also rather fabulously known as the Holy Duke of Yen. Over the next few months, I intend to change the narrative about you. We will take your most embarrassing biographical details and turn them into assets. We will do this in a variety of ways. Let us begin. Appearance. Physique and features. First of all,
the breast reduction was one of the most astute moves you could have made, and your physique is now optimal. Before your surgery, your hourglass figure only served to fuel the rumors of your cinematic extracurricular activities. But now, you have the body shape considered ideal to the women you seek to cultivate. Delicately emaciated, with just a hint of a well-managed eating disorder, please do not lose any more weight. I must also commend your surgeon on a remarkable job on your face. Remind me to get his name from you, for some of my other clients, of course. The rounder curves of your cheeks have been sculpted down, and your nose has been exquisitely reshaped. Admit it, you copied Cecilia Ching Moncur's nose, didn't you? I would recognize that patrician bump anywhere. But now you run the risk of looking too perfect, and this will only incite jealousy from your social competitors. So please refrain from any further procedures in the immediate future. No more fillers for now, and the Botox injections to your forehead are also no longer necessary, as I would like to see a few fine lines develop in the area between your eyebrows. We can always erase them in the future, but for the time being, possessing the ability to make tiny frowns will allow you to convey empathy. Hair. Your long jet black hair is one of your best features, but the high ponytails and dramatic updos you currently favor convey a look of aggression. When you enter a room, the ladies immediately think, "This woman is either going to steal my husband, my baby, or my yoga mat." I recommend wearing your hair down in a more layered look for most occasions and swept into a relaxed low chignon for formal occasions. Your hair also needs to be colored to add some brown lowlights, as this will soften your features overall. I will refer you to Ricky Chong at Moda Beauty on Seymour Terrace in Mid-Levels. You are no doubt accustomed to some overpriced salon located in one of the fancier hotels. But trust me, Ricky is someone you must cultivate. Not only is he a bargain, he is the hairdresser of choice to ladies from the best families. Fiona Tong Ching, Mrs. Francis Liu, Marion Su. When you first meet Ricky, tell him absolutely nothing about yourself. He will already know far too much. Over time, I will craft anecdotes that you can share with him, i.e., your daughter's ability to sing "Wouldn't It Be Lovely" in a perfect Cockney accent, the injured Siamese cat that you rescued, anonymously paying for a former teacher's chemotherapy bills, etc. These tales will make their way into the ears of all the right ladies. Note, you do not need to tip Ricky, since he is the owner of the salon, but occasionally you can feed him some Cadbury chocolate. He loves expensive chocolates. Makeup. Your makeup, unfortunately, requires a complete overhaul. The tofu milk skin and cherry red lips no longer suit you. Now that you are a respectable wife and mother, it is essential that you no longer appear like the unattainable object of fantasy for pubescent boys. We need to create a visage that is pleasing and non-threatening to well-bred women of all age groups. You want your color and complexion to look as if you only spent 50 seconds on it because you were too busy repotting tulips in your garden. I will accompany you to Germaine, my beauty consultant at the Elizabeth Arden counter at SoGo Causeway Bay. You need not actually buy all your new products at Arden. They are far too overpriced. We can pick up new cosmetics at Manning's Pharmacy, but you will buy one or two lipsticks at Arden in order to qualify for the free consultation and makeover. I may also have an additional coupon for a free gift with purchase. Please remind me. Other grooming suggestions. Discontinue the use of nail polish in red or any shades of red. Yes, pink is a shade of red. This is non-negotiable. You must remember that we have the Herculean task of removing any connotations of talons, claws, or grasping hands from your person. If I could get you to wear white gloves or wrap your fingers in rosary beads all the time, I would. From now on,
get used to nude nails or monochromatic tones of beige. For special occasions, Jinsoon's Nostalgia is a shade of pink beige polish that I will allow. In order to further avoid being mistaken for one of those girls who have been set up with a driver and a one-bedroom flat in Bremer Hill, you will also discontinue use of any perfumes or scented products. I will provide you with an essential oil made with ylang ylang, sage, and other secret ingredients that will make you smell like you have been baking apple tarts all morning. Wardrobe. I know you have been working with a top Hollywood fashion stylist who introduced you to couture and gave you an avant-garde look. Well, that look achieved its goals. You were noticed. But one of my most urgent goals is to purge you from the photo sections of all the magazines. As I have mentioned to you more than once, the sort of people you are now striving to cultivate prize invisibility more than anything. When was the last time you saw Jeanette Sang or Helen Houghton in the party pages? I'll tell you the answer. Once or twice a year at most. There has been far too much conversation about and coverage on your clothes. And you are more overexposed than the Venus de Milo. It's now time to evolve into your next persona, Mrs. Bernard Tai, dedicated mother and humanitarian on the rise. Please do not ever refer to yourself as a philanthropist again. It is the height of pretension. If anyone asks you what you do, say, I am a full-time mother and I do some part-time charity work. My assistants and I have done a full assessment and audit of your closet, and you will find that all apparel and accessories deemed appropriate remain as they are, while inappropriate clothing and accessories have been relocated into the second, third, and fourth guest bedrooms, with some additional overflow in the karaoke room. I hope you are not too alarmed by the rigorous edit we have done. I know the average outfit in your wardrobe costs more than a semester of tuition at Princeton, but it makes you look like a community college during summertime. No class. From my tally, there are 12 pieces remaining in your closet that are still fit to be seen in public, and 3 handbags. 4, actually. I will allow you to carry the Olympia Latan to Kill a Mockingbird book clutch on special occasions only because it has such noble connotations. Please see Appendix A, which lists all approved designers and brands for your new wardrobe. Any designers not listed there are off limits for the next year, with one exception. You should under no circumstances wear Roberto Cavalli ever again. Please do not think me brutal. I have specially curated this list in order for you to be dressed elegantly but forgettably in daily life. As Coco Chanel said, dress impeccably and they notice the woman. For big functions, and you will only be attending a few in the next year, we will choose an elegant gown that exudes a quiet luxury. Please Google Queen Rania of Jordan for some examples. Jewelry. The vast majority of your jewelry is of such a size and flamboyance that it crosses the point of vulgarity and enters into a territory that can only be described as obscene. Don't you realize that at your age, big gemstones only serve to make you seem older? As they say, the larger the diamonds, the older the wife, the more the mistresses. You do not need to look like a 60-something matron who has been placated with jewels by a husband who is keeping girlfriends in every province of China. All the pieces not listed below, especially the 55-carat diamond ring given to you by Her Majesty the Sultana of Borneo, should be stored in your vault for the foreseeable future. Evening jewelry for official functions will be negotiated on a case-by-case basis. But your daytime jewelry will now be restricted to the following. Wedding band. Not your Tiffany one, but your original wedding ring from the Little Chapel of the West in Las Vegas. Graf 4.5-carat diamond solitaire ring. Mikimoto pearl stud earrings.
Lin Nakamura Tahitian Black Pearl Drop Earrings. KSZ Single Strand Champagne Pearl Necklace. 3-carat pear-shaped diamond earrings, to be worn only with extremely casual sportswear, which creates a refreshingly unexpected juxtaposition and makes the size of the gemstones acceptable. Lorient Ruby Ring on Tension Mounting, Carnet Orchid Brooch, Pomelato Madeira Quartz Ring, Edward Chu Diamond and Jade Tennis Bracelet, Vintage Cartier Tank American Wristwatch. To this collection, you should add a few fun cheap trinkets to wear, like some Tibetan prayer beads, a jawbone up band, a child's toy necklace, or a rubber wristband supporting some charitable cause. This will further solidify the notion that you are Mrs. Bernard Tai and you no longer have anything to prove to anyone. Lifestyle. Interior design and decoration. Kasper von Morgenlath did an admirable job with your apartment, but the look is somewhat outdated and more than a little disturbing.
If I recall, the design concept was commissioned by your husband in the early 2000s to evoke the Miami Beach bachelor pad of a Bolivian drug cartel kingpin. This was done extremely successfully. I particularly admired the chalk body outline, mother of pearl inlay on the ebony wood floor, and the trompe-l'oeil bullet marks on your master bedroom headboard. But I think that it would be inadvisable to host a children's birthday party here, especially while those Lisa Yuskevich paintings are still hanging.
Rather than attempt a decor overhaul, which would take far too long anyway, I think you should instead be on the hunt for a new property. Living in a penthouse at Optus Towers sends the wrong message at this stage in your life. You are neither the second son of a tycoon, nor the managing director of some third-tier Swiss bank. It may have been designed by that famous American architect, overrated in my opinion. But it is not considered one of the good family buildings. I would like to see you relocate to a house in one of the neighborhoods on the south side of the island. Repulse Bay, Deep Water Bay, or even Stanley. This will send the message that you are a seriously committed wife and mother.
Never mind all the French expats in Stanley that ought to be committed.
Art collection. I was expecting to see the Palace of 18 Perfections in the pride of place at your apartment. Where is it? I would suggest integrating a few important works of art into your collection. The contemporary Chinese artists are completely overbought at the moment. And don't even get me started on the Americans. But German photography might be an interesting option for you. I think it would give your collection some sorely needed gravitas and gain you notice in serious collector circles if you were to possess one of Thomas Struff's epic images of pharmaceutical plants, Candida Hoffer's riveting studies of municipal libraries in Lower Saxony, or a delightful grouping of rusting water towers by Bernd und Hiller Becher. Household. I am very pleased to observe that your domestic help are well-treated and have actual bedrooms.
You wouldn't believe how many people I personally know who force their helpers. In Asia, the new generation of ruling class are using the term helper to refer to the people their parents call maids and their grandparents call servants.
To sleep in spaces no larger than closets or pantry rooms, and yet have spare bedrooms filled with clothes, shoes, or Yadro figurines. Instead of making them wear those French-made uniforms, might I suggest a smart modern uniform of navy blouses and white cotton slacks from J.Crew? Remember, your domestic helpers will talk with other domestic helpers on their days off, and having a reputation as a benevolent mistress will only further your cause. Transport. Automobiles. You should no longer be chauffeured around in that Rolls-Royce. I have always felt that unless one is either over 60 years of age or in possession of a silver helmet of hair that resembles Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, being seen in a Rolls is completely ridiculous. Instead, please purchase a Mercedes S-Class, Audi A8,
or BMW 7 Series like everyone else. Or, if you are feeling particularly brave, a Volkswagen Phaeton. We can discuss the possibility of a Jaguar after 1 year, depending on your social standing then. Aircraft.